All right, so it's our yearly Best in Jazz show. In the studio are the people who are always here. In a little while, I'll explain to you really who they are. But right now, simply know that they are Gene Seymour, Jen Allen, and Noah Behrman. They're always here. That's Kenny Barron, you hear in the background. We're going to bring Kenny back up because he's the first musician and the first album that we're going to discuss today. All right, so in just a second, I'm going to flesh out the biographies of our stellar panel, although if you listen every year, you should know who they are already. But before we do that, let's just talk a little bit about this first release. So Noah Behrman, Jen Allen, Gene Seymour, they're in here. And this is the Kenny Barron Quintet of Blue Waters from the album Concentric Circles. Noah, this is one of your nominations. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, I was just thinking this morning, actually, about a Time magazine article I saw in a doctor's waiting room in the early 90s when I was just starting to get into jazz about jazz's neglected generation, basically the people who were essentially my age now, who were too young to be considered legends and too old to be considered young lions. Mm-hmm. And Kenny was one of the musicians profiled there. Full disclosure, Kenny was my primary mentor in my own development as a musician. And it's been really great to see him embrace his elder statesman status as he's continued to be a vibrant force in the music, and including nurturing young musicians. Most of the people in his current quintet are a generation younger than he, and or maybe a little more, and sort of carrying on that Art Blakey, Miles Davis, Horace Silver legacy of working young musicians through the band. And he his own powers are totally undiminished.
All right. So before I get some reactions or thoughts from Gene and Jen, let me tell you who everybody is. I think that seems fair at this point. So you were just hearing Noah Behrman. He's a pianist, composer, educator. He directs the jazz ensemble at Wesleyan University, and he's the founder and artistic director of the nonprofit Resonant Motion, which is also, among other things, a label. He's sort of a more idealistic version of Suge Knight and Russell Simmons, but without the rap and the money and the bling and the criminal prosecutions and the weapons. But otherwise, very similar. He's a mogul, is what I'm trying to say. Also with us in studio is Jen Allen, pianist, composer, arranger, educator, and member of the BMI Workshop in New York City, also on the faculty at Trinity College. And also with us in studio, which is rare for these end-of-the-year sessions, the mayor of the Colin McEnroe Show Year in Jazz Best Album, whatever it is. Gene Seymour, a critic, reviewer for hire, writing pieces for CNN.com's opinion section, contributes essays to Book Forum and The Baffler, and on his blog, That Gene Seymour, he does. It's sort of like, you know, right after the Grammy, it's probably, you know, getting on Gene's top 10 list is like the other thing they're trying to do most of the time. So, Gene, since I just introduced you, I can't remember whether Kenny Barron made it in any of your hierarchies this year, but what do you think about this particular
release?
Well,
he's in my permanent hierarchy because, as Noah says, he has been with us for a long time. And I think right now it's safe to say that, you know, there's a whole generation of jazz pianists who were of that previous generation who are no longer with us, like Tommy Flanagan, Hank Jones, people who were – right now I'd say Kenny Barron is pretty much alone on that mountain. And the fact is he just puts out this stuff in trio, quartet, all this other stuff. He still sits in and gigs with other musicians. And he's kind of a quiet force of nature is how I'd put it, I guess, you know, no other way. I mean he's there in the hierarchy that is ongoing, eternal.
Jen, as someone who plays the same instrument, any reactions?
Oh, I love it. I love this album. I think that Gene's correct. He's just permanently on the list of top albums. He has earned it.
All right. So let's stay with the same instrument. So Wolfie, we're just going to drop down to Gene's list. And this is Brad Meldow Trio. Probably if there's a musician here we don't need to introduce to a Connecticut audience, it might very well be Brad Meldow, who grew up not too far from where we're sitting right now. This is a Grammy-nominated CD in addition to everything else, or album in addition to everything else. It's the album is called Seymour Reads the Constitution. We're going to play the song Friends. Brad Meldow, Gene, set it up for us.
Well, I don't need, just as you don't need to know that's who Brad Meldow is, you don't need to know that song is a Brian Wilson song, Friends, which are a couple of the standards that Brad brings onto this album to kind of broaden the definition of what it means to do classic pop. I think we're still in that phase now where jazz is beginning to slowly accommodate some of the music from the 60s and 70s. And Brian Wilson, who I think is long overdue for that kind of inclusion, has written songs that adapt themselves, as this version suggests. They're not just doing a rock and roll tune. They're playing a standard. And the thing with Meldow is that the reason I picked this one is that, to me, it's an example of how someone like Meldow manages not just to take these familiar chestnuts and thereby broaden the definition or the context of pop music, pop jazz music, but also he manages to make the song his own. When he plays this, it becomes a Brad Meldow song, you know, with all of his little inversions and the big chromatic perceptions that he has. I mean, he owes a lot. People talk about his relationship to other jazz musicians, but he's in a bigger game. I mean,
we should say the song Friends is, I mean, you could know the Beach Boys and know Brian Wilson a little bit anyway and not know that song because it's, you know, it's part of the Beach Boys canon in a slightly more obscure way. Is it on Smile? I think it's on Smile.
Just after Smile. Yeah.
So I have, like, these are all jazz experts, and I really don't know what I'm talking about most of the time, but especially in this context. So I have nothing to contribute except really strange bits of trivia that I've dug up for this show. So are you aware of a Beach Boys connection to one of your other picks this year? Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the ones we're playing today, actually.
Mr. Shorter, perhaps?
No.
Mr. Lloyd, of course, yes. Mr. Lloyd did Caroline No years ago.
Well, no, which so Charles Lloyd, who we're going to play a little bit in a little while, was play, I guess, doing some work with the Beach Boys and then got into, and I've never heard this, and I'm a little bit of a Brian Wilson freak, but maybe because of that I've never heard this. So Mike Love, who is either, you know, a less appealing person than Brian Wilson or like a totally evil incarnate, depending on who you talk to, he started some band called Celebration that was sort of like a Beach Boys ripoff band, and they put out two albums, and Charles Lloyd was sort of, you know, right in the middle of all that, and
sounds very
important. So anyway, that's a little strange little tie-in. So let's do the same thing. We got two. We never had so many pianists, I think, on the list on the big nine. I just worked out that way, and we've got pianists here in the room. So Noah, go ahead, react.
Well, it's true what Gene was saying about Brad's interpretation of pop songs. He's sort of been something of a beacon for our generation of musicians for playing stuff that, you know, playing Supertramp songs and Beatles stuff, Radiohead tunes, and kind of showing some possibilities for how you can interpret that material that was very much not constructed to work that way and make it fit in a straight-ahead jazz acoustic setting.
Yeah. And I don't know. Is that whole thing, is that over the whole, there was like, you know, if you go back even 10 or 15 years, certain kinds of jazz people get really upset, you know, if like Cassandra Wilson sang a monkey's tune or something. And are people kind of over that whole thing? Or
I mean, I think the natural order of things is that the people who would care about such things are getting older, so there's fewer of them and they're not
so are the monkeys, loudly, actually.
So, fair point.
That's right.
Right.
So, yeah, Jen, how about your reactions here?
Oh, I always love Brad Meldow.
Is there a way that you as a pianist can explain – like Brad Meldow, I mean, certain pianists are just kind of special and they mm-hmm. just, you know, and his stuff does get nominated for Grammys and it just kind of, I don't know. Is there a thing about him that can be articulated or is it in that kind of ineffable world of?
No, there's definitely things like the way he interprets melody, his sound on the piano, his trio sound is very unique. Like you can, I don't know, I went to see him live at the Litchfield Jazz Fest many years ago and the very first chord they played, I was like, that's the sound. It just has, he has a way to touch, that he touches the piano, so the sound he makes, and the way he phrases in his improvisations and in his melodies.
And the interaction with the other guys, too. Yeah. I mean, it's recognizable from, like, miles away, as they say. So,
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that, we did this jazz show that Noah helped me put together earlier this year or last year. I've lost track of time. But you know, one of the things that I think is I grasped a little bit more from this live show that we did at Watkinson is how much of jazz is listening. You know, you talk about sort of how he interacts with the other trio players. Mm-hmm. I think most people who aren't musicians think, well, no, you make some kind of noise with your fingers and your mouth or something like that. But like so much of it is just kind of listening to everything else.
Yeah. It's just like having a conversation.
Exactly.
You know, you're having –
yeah, it's conversation.
You're reacting. You're putting something out there. So, yeah.
Okay. I have a question that I'm going to – this is apropos of any of the particular nominees, but I wanted to make sure I remember to ask it, and I'd love to get all of your reactions to this. Noah, maybe I'll start with you. I mean, how much of the music that we're going to be talking about today and that is in general part of the sort of big 2018 jazz conversation, do you sense that there are a lot of jazz people who are reacting to what we euphemistically refer to as these times that we live in? Like, you know, Kurt Elling has an album out this year where he sang, you know, A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall and stuff like that. He's very explicit. He's reacting to the present political moment and the sense of societal dysfunction and the real need for radical change. I mean, is that kind of in the air a lot, or does jazz sort of operate on its own time clock?
Well, I think, I mean, for one of my picks, which we'll talk about later, by Todd Marcus, is very much in that vein. I would say, statistically speaking, it doesn't seem to be much more of that than there typically is, maybe a bit more because of the current government administration in our country.
Yeah, that's sort of what I'm asking.
But I
would like a percentage, like 23%, 24%, you know.
Well, I guess the thing is there's so much music coming out now. I mean, this was the hardest year ever for me in narrowing down this list. There were so many great records that came out. There's just so much more product on the physical and mostly digital shelves that I think there's more of that kind of voice of commentary and dissent, but there's also more of everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you agree with that, Gene?
Yeah. No, I'm not sure that it didn't start even before Trump. I'd say that even in the last, after Obama's election, I think there were people who felt empowered, more empowered to be emphatic about their social issues. I mean, Ambrose Akinmuzir started putting out some stuff in the wake of police shootings of unarmed black men, got a lot of people, particularly younger black musicians, dead center into that issue. So yeah, I'd say it even predates Trump to some extent.
I'm going to try to follow the clock a little bit here. So Jen, we're going to do one of your nominees. I don't know how to say this guy's name. Is Noah Behrman?
Behrman.
How do you say it?
Noah Behrman.
Noah Behrman, Resonance Ensemble. You want to set this up for us?
How did that happen?
No money changed hands.
No.
Well, this was both Gene and it was on Gene's list and mine, but I got the honor of talking about it here. I'm sure Gene can say some stuff too. But as we all know here and the rest of the world should kind of know, is that Noah does everything with every piece of music he puts his hands to has a purpose, and this is no different. he could probably tell us the best about what it's really about. But for me,
he's not allowed to talk right now.
For me, it struck a chord, and how he really brought this out to, or put this out in order to kind of bring to light his love and care for one of his musicians who was on this album, Claire Randall, and there's a whole story behind the Rock and the Redemption. I always say this name?
Sisyphus.
Sisyphus. You can actually say it. Yeah. He said you can't talk, but you can.
I will say it's the myth of Sisyphus.
The myth of Sisyphus.
Well, you know what? Also knows the first blues here.
Why don't we play a little bit of it and then we'll talk. We should say we did an entire show. I did an entire show with Noah about this, which we can maybe link to on the show page for this thing too. So if you want to go on a much deeper dive, you can. But we are going to play right now. Keep On.
Though I try to make it go, I try.
So, Gene Seymour, this made your list, too.
It did, and on two fronts. One, I think, obviously, the personal and emotional investment that was put into this. I think that this was somebody not just putting their heart into something, but also putting their very being into something. And so that, I thought, deserved, you know, recognition. But I also want to talk about it in a larger context of what's going on with jazz now. And that is that, to me, people always ask, well, where's the next Coltrane coming from? Where's the next Miles Davis coming from? We have to stop asking that question, because what's going on right now, and I think what Noah's doing with this ensemble is emblematic of it, there are new formats and new contexts for the music itself, for presenting the music. I mean, there will always be a place for the trio and the quartet and the horns in front. But the combination of voices, of instruments, this is going on a very broad scale by a lot of musicians, some of them in Noah's generation, some of them younger. And I think that there's not enough attention or focus being placed on that kind of work, and yet some of the most significant and interesting work is being done in those contexts. That's why I thought it was important to recognize Noah's work, not just because of the content, but also because of what it represents in terms of what jazz is doing right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, Noah, you can talk. But you should talk about yourself in the third person.
Noah Behrman is a windbag. I appreciate both of you for shouting it out. Thank you. And I want to acknowledge that the album is a benefit for an initiative that the nonprofit I direct, Resonant Motion, has started in the memory of Claire Randall, the vocal soloist you heard on that track. And today would have been her 29th birthday.
Oh,
so
wow.
If you go to clairescontinuum.com, you can read more about this initiative that we've begun in her memory.
We will. I think it's, if you haven't listened to it, the show that Noah and I did when this album came out is worth listening to. We'll try to post it onto the onto our webpage there, and we'll also post a link. Wolfie is telling me we'll post a link to the Watkinson show that we did too. So we're going to do one more song before we go to a break here. This, I was so excited to be introduced to this person, and I may not even say her name correctly.
Sunna Gunnlaugs.
So this is an Icelandic pianist. She married a drummer, Scott McLemore. I'm convinced that musicians marry each other more often than people in any other profession. I have no proof of that whatsoever, but it seems to me, well, like Jen, you know, for example. This woman, boy, I just was listening to all kinds of stuff that she played once you cracked the ice, as it were.
She's brilliant.
Yeah. You want to say anything else about this before we play a little bit of it?
Sure. Or? It's the latest album by her trio, though it's a quartet on some tracks. And she's been doing really wonderful mixtures of straight-ahead jazz and Icelandic music for quite a while. I've known her for more than 20 years, and Scott, the drummer, and her trio and her husband. And she's just a really inspiring and extremely prolific, sensitive, powerful musician.
Somehow or other, I wandered over onto her Bandcamp page where she has like the score to this movie called Reykjavik, and it's this kind of really cool, jazzy, noir, Icelandic-sounding, I guess, score. Anyway, let's play a little bit of this. First of all, we should say that the album itself is called Ancestry. This is called A Major Deal. I really am kind of wild for this performer. She sounds a little like Keith Jarrett, a little like Jen Allen. I think those are the two comparisons that I would make. But once again, I'll go back to you. This is your instrument.
Yeah. I feel like it's great. We've just listened to three different pianists, or actually four, if you include Noah, but he was on keyboard. But, you know, you can really hear the difference in the tones and their approach. And she has a really a nice way about carrying the trio. Playing trio is such a staple to being a pianist.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta get on that. Anyway, but there's so many things you can express through the trio, and I really like how she's doing that.
Yeah. Mr. Mayer?
Well, she's got very big ears. Mm-hmm. You can tell that by the way she plays. She's listening to everything around her, and you know, I'm fascinated by Iceland. I mean, on all levels,
right.
with its literature, with its music, and just the whole culture there.
Even
and,
its phone book.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have last names in the phone book. I don't know if that may have changed, but
I did not know that. Yeah, but
until recently, they did not have last
names. But I
figured
that you did, yes. Yeah. But yes, I know. I'm glad to hear this. I really am.
All right. Yeah, it's terrific. I'm just going to be a fan of hers from now
on.
All right. So let's take a little break. We're going to come back. We're already behind schedule. I will move the Mule team even faster. All right, so we've gone from Sisyphus to Prometheus. That's Prometheus Unbound by Wayne Shorter from the album Emanon, which I figured out eventually was No Name spelled backwards. In the studio with us are the champions of jazz we have every year, Gene Seymour, Jen Allen, and Noah Behrman. This is one of Gene's picks. He needs roughly 45 minutes to talk about it, so I don't know what we're going to do about that.
Well, thank you for explaining the title. That takes a few minutes off. Now, what can only be described as an epical package of music that includes, and I'm not joking about this, a full-color graphic novel,
mm-hmm.
along with three discs, from which you have just heard the first, which has Wayne Shorter's quartet, one of the best and most endlessly fascinating music groups around, playing with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra on original compositions that are spun off this graphic novel. I don't think I have the time to explain what the plot is, if there's such a plot. But
please don't.
But just know that if there was any doubt, Colin McEnroe listeners, of the multiverse's existence, this album will completely completely confirm it for you.
Well, our listeners are in no doubt about the multiverse. We did an entire show about it.
And
they know how it works. We've given them the whole subway map.
Exactly.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, Jen, maybe I don't know who is Wayne Shorter to you. What is she in your multiverse? What is he in your multiverse?
Wow. Again, we don't really have time for this, but he's changed the course of music for so many musicians, the way he composes, the way he plays. I think just even in the sound of it, you know, you start to add the strings, it just has another worldly sound to it. So Wayne has changed the course of music undeniably.
Yep. Noah?
Yes, all of that. It is an incredible gift to all of us that Wayne Shorter still walks the earth. And I have geeked out so much. This is my number one of the year also, this package. And it's amazing and inspiring that he's still so creatively vibrant when the things he did in the 1960s would be enough for him to coast on for the rest of eternity.
Mm-hmm. All right. Noah actually has dressed up as one of the characters in the graphic novel today. There's no way we can convey to you what that looks like. But all right, we're going to go from wherever in the multiverse that was to Philadelphia. Orin Evans flipped the script. This is one of Jen's picks. Do you want to set it up at all? This is the Captain Black Big Band.
It's not a full big band. It's a 9-piece band, but it's. It has the full sound, so of a big band. But I picked this because, well, first it's I love Orin. I think he's a great player, and I love the stuff he's putting out. But this specifically hits all the spots for me where I'm like, I really like the angularness of it, the hard hittingness of it. It's kind of a mix between McCoy and Ornette and everything in there. And this song specifically just leaves you. Not sure what's coming next, and I like that.
We have a question for Wolfie. How many players do you need to have a big band?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, well, you said it was not quite a big band.
Well, it's not the traditional big band. The traditional big band is about, like, I don't know.
You've got to break into double.
15, 16
people. Yeah,
you've
got to be in double figures probably.
But this is, I think this is nine or ten people.
Yeah.
I think it's nine.
Lyle Lovett tours with his large band. Maybe this is going to be a large band.
But in the record, he talks about that he did this for monetary reasons, and it's hard to carry a big band.
Yeah.
So this is just a pared-down version of it, but it's great. It
all
has
right.
all the energy of
We're
it.
We're going to play a little bit of it. We'll talk some more. I think this might be our last piano player of the day, too. We're moving on. Everybody's out there going, when's there going to be a bass clarinetist? Come on. Where's the bass clarinet? That's coming up very soon. That's Orin Evans from the Captain Black Big Band, one of several Grammy-nominated albums. I don't know why I decided to care about the Grammy nominations this year. I just decided to. But and he is a Philly musician.
Right.
And you want to say something about that?
I do, actually, because when I was living in Philadelphia, he's one of the crown princes of the Philly jazz scene there. And we didn't mention that he has taken over the piano mm-hmm. chair in the Bad Plus Power Group. So
from Mr. Iverson, yeah.
Exactly. So he has become even more prominent than he was. And this band album, I've seen this band perform, and some of these kind of world within worlds horn arrangements, which seem to kind of spiral into each other, I mean, on this track especially, you know, when you see it live, it's even more like, how do they do that? You know?
That's why another reason I like this album, because it is live and you can really feel the energy
yeah.
that they had
yeah.
in
yeah.
those concerts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listened to a bunch of things from this album, and I wound up liking some of the other cuts better than I like this one. It's really tremendous and fun and tons of energy, Noah?
I'm just going to say, if there's any young musicians listening, in addition to being a wonderful pianist and composer, Orin, who I've known since he was a teenager, I was also a teenager, is an incredible role model for what it is to be a jazz musician in this era. He's a great nurturer of the scene. He's a great entrepreneur. He's just really taking care of business from all angles.
All right. I promised you that because they're, on the Twitterverse already, they're all saying, well, this is just all piano players. Where's the bass clarinetist here? Come on. Jazz is basically bass clarinetists. And so Todd Marcus is coming up here. This is one of Noah's choices. This is from an album called On These Streets. It's called Ground Zero at Penn and North. Let's play it first, and then Noah can say a little bit more about it. Get us going. So we're working our way down 95 from Philadelphia to Baltimore. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, well, so Todd is both a musician and a social activist living in Baltimore, and he lives in the neighborhood where Freddie Gray was murdered. And this whole album depicts what was going on there, both historically in that neighborhood and surrounding that social trauma. And it, to me, is a particularly inspiring example. Anyone who knows me knows that I have a soft spot for socially conscious art that is successful both in the consciousness standpoint and artistically. And Todd is such a great example with this record in particular of how these two things can be married in a way that enhances both. Like the edge in the music is so clearly imbued with the spirit of his lived experience and that of his community.
He, by the way, this organization that he runs called Intersection for Change, Intersection of Change. It's an amazing multi-pronged organization that does stuff with urban farming and recovery and the arts and Intersection of Change. And it's at intersectionofchange.org. It, in and of itself, is worth checking out.
It is. Todd is definitely walking the walk as a person from multiple angles.
Yeah. You want to say anything about this? Mr. Mayor?
I am not familiar with Mr. Marcus, and I am ashamed to say that this is totally new on my radar. But as you say, in both execution and in its conception, it's working. And I think it's probably a process for him right now, I'm guessing, you know, this whole thing that he's doing. This is a process for him.
This was new for me before, you know, I saw your list and checking it out. I love all the musicians on the album as well, like Paul Mollenbeck and Warren Wolf and George Colligan, and you know, like they're playing as Noah said. So I have to love him because he's doing the things that I also support. So I got to check him out more. So
a fun fact here: he is a bass clarinetist who was featured in the first ever World Bass Clarinet Convention in Rotterdam in 2005. Now that's been collapsed into what's called Clarinet Fest, and we got a lot of people writing in to say, "When is Clarinet Fest 2019?" That's in Knoxville. It's in Knoxville, Tennessee this year. It's usually in Europe, July 24th to the 28th. So
they're writing this in now as we're speaking.
Yeah, they were sending a lot of on Twitter and
okay.
Some emails and stuff like that. They want to know. All right, so I don't like clarinets, but I really like this. I mean, it's not like I don't have like this deep ingrained prejudice against clarinets, but if I had to list my favorite instruments, it would be pretty low. But I like this a lot. I don't go to Clarinet Fest is what I'm trying to tell you. All right. So we're going to go now to the aforementioned Charles Lloyd, he of the Evil Mike Love group, but he's so much more than this. This is Charles Lloyd and the Marvels and Lucinda Williams, the country vocalist. Maybe do you want to set this up at all, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah. Charles Lloyd just turned 80 this year, and this album and an accompanying tour was meant to celebrate this. And I followed Charles Lloyd since I was a teenager in the 60s, and it astonishes me that I quote Bob Dylan, you know, so much older than he's younger than that now. Well, 80, he plays like a youngster, like somebody who's just found the fountain of youth, which for those of us getting older is very inspiring. But this particular group has a lot of talk about interesting context. I mean, you've got a steel guitar player and you have Bill Frisell in this band, along with Ruben Rodgers on it's an interesting mix of people. But the element that makes this more fascinating is, of course, Lucinda Williams, a singer about whom I've had mixed feelings over the years. But she has found a home with these guys in ways that just took me completely by surprise, as did this album.
Yeah, this surprised me too. This is not a voice that I would associate with jazz. Not that there's really such a thing as a jazz voice. But as you'll hear, actually, we should just play it and then Noah and John will say some stuff.
Yeah.
Before I go to Noah and Jen about this, I do want to say that the other cut on this album you should check out, and you can just bring it up on YouTube or something, is their cover of Angel, the Jimi Hendrix song, which I will almost guarantee you will slightly change your life anyway. So I don't know, Noah, maybe you go first. Once again, we're talking an awful lot about the elasticity of what we call jazz.
Yeah, well, and Charles is interesting. It just occurred to me as we were listening to this that it was kind of a stellar year for elder statesmen rooted in Memphis, specifically. Harold Mayburn put out another great record. George Coleman did a record with Connecticut native Brian Charette that was beautiful. And these are people, these are not just people who happen to be from the same place. They came up practicing together and essentially learning from one another as peers. And that sound mixed with his Coltrane influence and this increasing infatuation with Americana makes for a really interesting mix.
Yeah, Jen, any thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, we're really expanding what we call, you know, jazz. I teach this in my class at Trinity. When I teach jazz history, I'm like, well, what do you guys think is jazz? You know, and they all have ideas, and I constantly am trying to expand those. Ideas, because it's really an umbrella term for so many things, and this art form has really been able to absorb so many different things, and people can make it their own. Like, this doesn't just sound like, you know, people taking one idea and putting it next to another idea. It really sounds like a unique sound, and you get musicians like Eric Harland and Ruben Rodgers, and they make this happen. So this is a great album.
All right. So we're going to take a little break here. I should tell you all of this stuff, because I know it goes by fast and you can't write it all down and you're driving and all this stuff. But we'll at WNPR.org/Colin. You can find all the shows here, including this one. And we'll give you a whole playlist and stuff like that. So let's take a little break and we'll come back with our last couple of things we need to talk about.
but we have come too far to turn.
Okay, we're back. Usually we do credits right here, but Kion and I both forgot about them. So anyway, we're the only people who get credits, I mean, besides our wonderful guests here on the panel, and I'll remind you in just a second who they are. But Wolfie and I kind of put the show together ourselves. I do need to tell you, we have like a really complicated a really complicated thing coming up after today. So tomorrow at 1 o'clock, during our regular 1 o'clock time slot, I'm going to do a show about sort of, you know, the idea that as AI drives out various human activities, human jobs and stuff like that, we will gradually discover things that only human beings can do, or that things that human beings are irreplaceable at, even by the most sophisticated AI. So we're going to try to, you know, wrap our hands around that idea tomorrow. There isn't really a clear roadmap about how to do that. But Josh Nalea, if anybody can do that, probably our producer Josh Nalea will. So, but then at night at 8 o'clock, we're going to do another live show, and that's our End of the Year Knows panel, where we're just going to talk about how culture was in 2018. We're going to have 9 of our Knows panelists in the studio here. What could go wrong? And then the next day, that's Thursday, then Friday, we will rerun the night show at 1 o'clock and the old 1 o'clock show at 8 o'clock, if you follow me. So we'll have the Knows at 1 o'clock on Friday, and then we'll run Josh's show about AI and human beings at 8 o'clock on Friday night. I know none of that made any sense, but it was important for me to say it to you anyway. In studio, Gene Seymour, a critic, reviewer for hire, writing pieces for CNN.com's opinion section. He contributes essays to Book Forum and The Baffler. And if you want to see his entire top 10 list plus other musings as well, you have to go to the blog That Gene Seymour. Is there like a This Gene Seymour that you're competing with? Or?
No, it's a long story.
It's a long story. It's a long story. No, right. Jen Allen, the one and only Jen Allen, is a piano player, a composer, arranger, and educator, and member of the BMI workshop in New York City, also faculty at Trinity College. Noah Behrman also plays one of those piano things, and also is a composer, educator, founder, and artistic director of the nonprofit Resonant Motion, and he also directs the jazz ensemble at Wesleyan University. So we're running towards the end of our list, although we have one extra song that I kind of added, So we're going to play something by Andrew Hadro. I think that's
Hadro.
How you – Hadro. Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. So already. Maybe just set this up a little bit, and then we'll play it, and then we'll talk.
Sure. Andrew is a terrific baritone saxophonist out of New York, and I met him up at Litchfield Jazz Camp many years ago, and he put this album out this past year, and I – sometimes get my friends' albums and I listen and I love them. And this one, though, struck me. And I listened and listened and listened and listened some more. It's just three people. It's him and Julian Shore and Rogério Boccato. No bass. Julian plays a lot of that on the piano. And then Andrew's overdubbing lots of different either saxophone or bass clarinet. And there's just something to this music. His idea, I guess, was to play music of his peers and people who are, you know, have influenced him. And this song specifically is actually a Wayne Shorter tune. And it was hard for me to pick a song off this album because I really enjoy them all. And it's just one that I continue to listen to.
Right. So this is Over Shadow Hill Way, excerpt 1 from For Us, The Living 2, Mars Essence, which is all very, very complicated. You're going to have to go to the website to figure out more about this. Even getting the album may be slightly complicated. Anyway, let's hear a little bit of it. All right, so this is obviously something that really bears a lot more listening. So first of all, Mr. Mayor, was this on your radar before?
It was not. And, you know, there is so much room for the baritone sax to sort of show how flexible a voice it is. And the first thing that struck me was the register. I mean, it may sound weird, but I have never or have rarely heard that instrument played at that height or altitude or whatever.
Pitch?
Pitch. Yeah. It kind of woke me up a little bit. Yeah.
Noah?
That's a beautiful record. And I would be remiss not to point out that Rogerio Boccato, the wonderful percussionist you hear there, put out his debut album this year, which is also gorgeous, and which I guess there's so many cans of worms. We started with his Kenny Barron album that had Jonathan Blake on drums, who's on a great Lonnie Smith album from this year and on the Black Art Jazz Collective album from this year. It's as well as Jen's and my new record, Raise Up by Trio 149.
I'm holding it up to the microphone so you can see it at home.
But it's just a bit overwhelming, frankly, just how much great music is out there. It requires some vigilance, I know, on our part not to let beautiful things just slip by our consciousness. But yeah, Andrew did beautiful work playing on and arranging this album.
Well, the other reason it could slip by is he's got his own label called Tone Rogue Records, I think, and he seems to be not interested in having his music just pop up in some algorithm on some streaming service or something. Like, he wants you to actually know that you want it and go get it and stuff like that. So that's why I said you might have a little bit of a struggle finding this thing.
Good for him.
I'm just going to end here, first of all, by thanking Mr. Mayor, Gene, and Noah, and Jen. We're going to play one little piece of music. This guy, I think he visited us one time, maybe by phone or something, on one of these year-end jazz shows. He's Joel Fromm, and I just saw him twice last weekend. And he's up he plays on two Grammy-nominated albums. One of them is in Latin jazz, and that is the Daphnis Prieto big band. And then this Freddie Cole, the vocalist Freddie Cole, features Joel very heavily on his new, also Grammy-nominated album, My Mood Is You. So I thought we'd go out with a little bit of Joel Fromm on sax.
Let's be the way we were when we first began.